Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mary Neal. I'm the station director. I want to thank you for joining. I want you to know that Leona Branda is the guest. And her show is about to begin right now. Leona Brando?
Yes. How are you, Mrs. Neal?
I'm doing well. I have fallen asleep in my chair. I'm so glad you called me. I've had a cold for a couple of weeks, and I'm getting better. But it's easy for me to go to sleep, but I'm sorry about that. I'm so glad that your guests are online, and we're looking forward to an exciting show today.
Thank you. We are going to be interviewing today Valerie Buford, who is going to be discussing the situation with her brother, Leon Benson, who has been known for many years being incarcerated on a wrongful conviction. And so we will be interviewing Valerie today, and I want to ask Valerie to please state her name and tell us a little bit about herself.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for inviting me on the show. My name is Valerie Buford. I'm the sister of Leon Benson, prisoner that's innocent in prison. And he's been basically fighting since 1998, since he has been convicted of this false imprisonment. And a little bit about myself, I'm a single-parent mom. I have a daughter. And basically, I spend my time on trying to help my brother out in the best way I can, reaching out to the public for help with his legal defense funds to help bring justice through his situation.
So Valerie, I wanted you to talk a little bit about Leon. I know it's been over 10 years now that he's been incarcerated, and can you just briefly discuss, you know, how this all came about and actually, you know, what has been going on throughout the years? I used to follow Leon's case because I was very interested in it. I was really upset that he was accused of a crime he did not commit. And throughout the years, getting so involved in so many other issues, I kind of lost track of what was going on. So
okay.
Can you just let the audience know some things about him and how it came about and what's been going on since?
Okay. Well, August the 8th of 1998, it was a victim by the name of Casey Sean that was murdered. And Leon was arrested on August the 14th of 1998 for that murder that took place. And he had got convicted in 99, sentenced 60 years in prison. And he was in Wabash Correctional Facility. He was in solitary confinement for about 10 years. He's been in prison for 16 years now. And within the 16 years, he was in solitary confinement for 10. He got released from solitary confinement in 2011, and now he have a situation where he's, you know, he's in Pelleton County right now, and you know, I things, you know, to raise money for his legal defense funds, and I had got some T-shirts printed out and was, you know, doing a fundraiser campaign on his behalf. And they have a JPay, you know, where you can, you know, set up appointment and visit your loved ones online now. or they can send you a videogram, you know, or you can send them vice versa. And Leon, recent videogram was August 9th. And, you know, JPay, they don't notify if, you know, you got a videogram or nothing like that. You just will have to know or whatever. You have to check, you know, log in on your account. And when I had sent him money September the 5th, I noticed that he, you know, sent the videogram. And basically he was just thanking the people for supporting the cause, the movement, the Truth Never Dies movement, and supporting him and also letting him know that he do have an upcoming hearing date, which is November the 19th. That's 2014 and 9 o'clock a.m. and that's going to be at Indiana, and the address there would be 200 East Washington Street, and that would be his hearing would take place in courtroom 2. So I will like for people to come out if they nearby, you know, in the Midwest area to come out and support. And if you cannot support, you know, as in coming, you can also, you know, support in money that can help with his legal defense fund. Because we're looking at with his post-conviction, we're looking for his case to be overturned. And with this case being overturned, it can he will be retried. It'll be a retrial.
Okay, and, Valerie, I'd like to take this one step at a time because
okay.
You started to say something about this, JPEG or JPEG, and then you switched
the
over. Can we just, because we want to be very clear on how people can get in contact with you to help in any way with your brother, okay?
Right.
So if you can give us the contact information, first of all, of who they would contact for anyone that wants to help with Leon's case, who would they contact and how would they contact?
Okay, well, as far as with Leon, if they want to directly contact Leon, they can contact Leon, Leon Benson, that's B-E-N-S-O-N, and his DOC number is 995256, and he's in Pelleton Correctional Facility, and the address is 4490 West Reformatory Road in Pelleton, Indiana, and the zip code there is 46064. And also, you can like us on Facebook. I do have a public figure page for him, and that's Leon Benson Free Leon Benson. Is open to the public, so you can like it, and it, you know, give you updates on what's going on with Leon's case. But he, you know, he do have an upcoming hearing date, which is November the 19th, and I'm trying to get people to come out and support the cause for his wrongful conviction.
Okay, and Valerie, how would they contact you if they wanted to discuss it further?
On Facebook, they can connect me. They can connect with me
email.
on Facebook figure page for the Free Leon Benson page. I have the contact information there.
Okay.
My P.O. Box phone number is all the contact information is on everything you need to know, and then also the website. If they want to get involved, if they want to, you know, donate, or they want to learn more about the case, you can visit www.freeleonbenson.org. So it's a lot of information out there if you want to learn more about the case.
You also mentioned Leon's been in, he was in solitary confinement for 10 years?
Yes. And
Can you just tell us a little bit about how he, I mean, how he was able to endure 10 years? I mean, this is something that we have advocates have been working on for a long time, is trying to find ways to fight this long-term solitary confinement and how it affects any individual, whether it be a juvenile or a young or old or middle-aged prisoner. It's a very traumatic and inhumane way of punishing someone to have them in for even a year, even 6 months, never mind 10 years. So how did it affect Leon, and did he ever mention anything about how, you know, how he felt about the whole thing? And how did he survive it?
Oh, well, I guess having the willpower to survive. He was very strong-minded. I know that he done, like, things with, like, doing Shakespeare, keeping himself, like, active, writing, reading, you know, meditating, even though he was, you know, locked up in solitary confinement and suffocated in a prison. So it's like, you know, it's just he, you know, he had no other choice but to adapt. But it is, you know, it's a it's mental abuse. Is I will say that I cannot imagine. I don't know how Leon did survive it, but he did. And you know, God, the praise, the Most High, the praise, because he survived it, and right now he's in solitary confinement, you know. So with the JK,
they have him in solitary confinement again.
Yes, with the videogram JK that he sent me. Like, how can he be punished for an email or letters or whatever he sent out and let it to be known? And that's what I did. I shared it on social media, on Facebook, and he got punished for buying the t-shirts and supporting him, and he got in trouble for that. They said that he was starting a riot. I don't know how they can get a hit out of him, you know, thinking people, also telling, you know, the family, you know, to come out and support him November the 19th, 2014 for his...
I wanted to, before anything happens on this radio show, I do want to mention, Mary has been having problems for some time with the radio shows, not only this one, but any radio show that she is hosting or putting out there for others. And I'm hearing you speak, and I'm also hearing interference. And I don't know if you can hear it at that end, but I just wanted you to know, because there have been interviews that we have done in the past where we've actually gotten cut off. So in the event that we do get cut off, I want you to know that this will still be airing. The video will still be out there after. And so we want to try to get as much info on this as we can in the event anything does happen. But what I was going to ask also, is there an attorney that's working with Leon?
Yes, attorney Eric.
You don't have to mention the name unless if it's okay with him. But he does have an attorney. Are there any others advocating for him on his behalf, other than the family and the attorney?
Have a supporter, Anne Wright. She's supporting him as well. It's been supporters that's been, you know, in and out, and you know, and then resurfaced back. But right now it's time for, you know, the supporters to come on in. You know, things do happen in people's lives that, you know, that they cannot be there as much as they were. But Leon, he did have, you know, and he do have many support, you know.
I know that Beth Michaels from the Christian Pen Pal Connection was also at one point in time involved with Leon, with Pen Pals or whatever. That's the Christian Pen Pal Connection out of North Carolina. But also, have you registered or signed up or joined any of the advocacy groups, the prisoner advocacy groups out there?
I did. It's just quite a few groups that I joined. I had like two. I got my personal Facebook, and I had a Facebook page for Leon, and they recently shut that down on as of last month.
And who shut it
off? The Internal Affairs had it to be shut down in Pelleton Correctional Facility.
The Internal Affairs had it shut down?
Yes. Yeah.
Internal Affairs, is that with the prison?
Yes, it's the police prison.
How can they do something like that?
I don't know, because I didn't have Leon's name as Leon on there. So, you know, they put it as like an inmate can't have a Facebook page. So, and he is locked up. But, you know, it's just like they're doing any and everything to basically, because next month is big, it's the moment that we've been waiting on for years.
Mm-hmm.
So, because this Facebook been up for like 6 years, so why not shut it down? You know, it's like they didn't know about it, you know. But I had like a lot of contact, a lot of groups that I was in on that page there, and now that it's been shut down, it's like, you know, now I'm like kind of like reaching out to the people and trying to get all the support that I can. So,
have you ever heard of A Just Cause?
Say that again, ma'am.
The name of the organization is A Just Cause.
A Just Cause. No.
Well, you might want to go on the internet and type in A Just Cause. And what it is, it is they're out of Colorado Springs in Colorado. And I will give you their information is A Just Cause. Their email is contact@a-justcause.com. Their telephone number is 719-373-1867. A Just Cause is an all-volunteer organization that is dedicated to educating American citizens about the growing and alarming number of wrongful convictions occurring right here in the United States. And they provide a lot. They do have attorneys. They provide links to advocacy sites where they're working with the wrongfully convicted. And they provide links to wrongfully convicted websites. They provide a list of books dealing with wrongful convictions. There's a lot of things that they do, and they were. I did interview the spokesperson and actually a couple of others from A Just Cause on our radio talk show a couple of months back, and they're very. It's an organization you might want to check into and contact to see how in what ways they can also help in Leon's situation.
Okay.
It's called Just Cause again, and you can find them on the website just by typing in A Just Cause.
Okay, so they have a website, and I will check it out and see what I can get from them, what assistance that I can get, because we need all the support, you know, that for the truth will close and Leon will be exonerated, or, you know, case would be retried a case, so, you know, but who wants to go through all that? So that's why I'm raising up money, because it costs, you know, like for his PCR attorney, it was $15,000. On top of that, you have other legal, you know, issues
Oh yeah,
you know, you have to call. You know, it's a lot. And you know, with a trial attorney, that's, you know, you're talking at the least is $25,000. So I'm, you know, trying to raise money and then, you know, have something to give to the people. You know, with T-shirts, I just created, you know, some hoodies as well, you know, bring awareness to justice, and have The Truth Never Dies on there as well. And they can also, the listeners, they can visit me on Facebook and see it on Facebook, and they want to purchase, and the hood is $27, and all, you know, money going to be raised will go towards his legal defense fund, whatever that's needed will go towards that. And I do have my mother, Yvonne Buford.
Hey, how are you doing today? This is John calling in from Manhattan.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi. This is Joe Mancuso calling in from Manhattan. I was wondering if I can, you know, just give you my point of view on this justice advocate and progressive politics action that's going on in our society today.
Please do.
Yes, so I just wanted to ask you just a quick, you know, background of what you do. I mean, is this like your full-time job, or are you, you know, a justice advocate outside of the radio scene?
I started New Vision Organization in 2014. I recently stepped down, and I have started to do the radio talk show for the injustices going on in the United States. And I also am an advocate. I am working in solo and networking with other advocates across the country. But I was the original founder of New Vision Organization.
Oh, wow, that's great. Yeah, see, I'm actually a criminal justice major at the university. And I was wondering if I could just ask your point of view on what do you think is the best way to enter the justice scene? What is the best way to sort of advocate the justice of minorities, of the convicted?
The best way to advocate for them?
Yes.
Well, I started it's called the letter writing campaign for the abused and the severely deprived. And I encourage people to join in, to they can go on the Facebook and sign up. And whenever we hear of any prisoners who are being severely abused or deprived in any way at all, then we start writing letters. We start making phone calls on their behalf. And the only way, and as you know, there's so much going on in the United States right now.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
There is an awful lot going on in the United States, and it almost makes us believe that or start to realize that all these things that are happening internationally may be happening also because of what's not happening in our own country. And these are concerns that
I have.
We have prisoners who are being abused, yet we have a government that says they don't tolerate abuses in other countries. You know, we have so many things going on that need to be addressed, and what's happening is it's not being addressed. People are talking about wanting to help, and yet they're not doing it. Everything is becoming a money-making business. So we have organizations that may start out good, and the next intention is once there's money coming in, the work is not being done. It's a matter of just collecting the money. And I ran New Vision Organization. I ran New Vision Organization for 10 years, but I've been advocating for 18 years. And one of the things that I never did, I never tried to get funding for the organization. What is that? Hello?
Hi, Leon. I have no idea what kind of background noises they were or what have you. Perhaps your caller will call again. Right now, you have callers on 9956 and 7368.
Okay, and is that Valerie's, Valerie, is that your call, the people that are calling in on behalf of Leon? Did we lose Valerie too?
We also have a caller at 6431.
Yes.
Okay, do you want to take the calls now?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. We lost you for a minute.
Okay, wait just 1 minute. I'm Valerie's sister. Let me pull her into the call. Just 1 moment.
Leona, we have callers on 6-4.
Okay,
directly
into the line.
Okay.
Hello?
Leona Brando?
Yes.
I have no idea. I've never heard anything with that many echoes. Your callers are calling on cell phones. As you know, cell phones are very easily taken over. We have a great deal of problems with NSA, FBI, CIA, whoever is over the internet. The situation is that these people protect the prison industrial complex. The prison industrial complex is one of America's most lucrative industries. Basically, it's called the skin trade. It is called human trafficking. This process of human trafficking, it nets over $80 billion per year to prison investors. And this money oftentimes is borrowed upon even before it is earned. So in other words, if an individual has a sentence that they've been handed down, these prison investors will borrow money against your 10 or your 20-year sentence even before they've earned it. And so, therefore, if they must release you because you're proved innocent and they've already borrowed on your sentence, then they have to pay that money back. Excuse me. Did you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a money game.
So can we hear from the callers that are ready to call in, and just let them know.
4048 back on the line. 4048 and 4529 back on the line.
I'm 4048.
Pardon?
I'm 4048.
Your question?
Mine is not a question. I am Leon Benson's sister, his older sister.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to voice a few things that Val was trying to get around at and was saying. He was physically removed from using the telephone through the Pendleton Penitentiary's Internal Affairs Department, stating that because of the videogram that he sent on JPay, and I'm going to tell you, the only thing he said was, I would like to thank you guys for supporting me. He was on a prison phone when he made it. He said, I would like to thank you guys for supporting me. I'm asking that you guys, please come out and support me. Thanks to my family. Thanks to my sister Valerie for all you have done. Now, based on that one statement, they decided that that was trying to cause a riot within the prison system, a riot just by him thanking his supporters. And following that evening, on the next week, he was talking to Valerie on the telephone, where he had a 30-minute limit, and they just came and pulled him off of the telephone completely. Both Valerie, she called Internal Affairs, and I did as well. What they told me personally, as long as he's not in any bodily harm, there's no reason to call Internal Affairs about anything that's going on with him. You asked the question, what kept him strong within those 10 years of solitary confinement? His reading and writing. He read and he wrote, and he increased the knowledge just about as most inmates, you know, would do, that doesn't want to be a part of the system. They find other ways to create new windows to different worlds behind those cement blocks. You know, what we're looking for in support by numbers, support by speaking. But I wanted to ask you a question. I heard you mention the letter writing campaign. And I'm going to tell you this. I'm in Birmingham, Alabama. I'm not up north. When I went forth to try to solicit help here in Alabama about my brother, I didn't get any response.
And you know, one of the things I will say is when I was running No Vision Organization, we were national. We had volunteers from almost every state. We had prisoners in every state. We didn't have the southern states, Alabama, Arkansas, Mississippi. Those were the states that we had problems getting recruits from. But then again, there's also the issues of the exceptional racial issues in southern states like that. My concern is now I've been doing this for so long, it's nothing new to me what these prisoners are going through. The letter writing campaign, you mentioned Internal Affairs. First of all, I would say that's a big mistake, because if you're going to contact Internal Affairs, you don't want to do it because it's connected with the prisons. You want to contact the United States Department of Justice, and even though they don't do much of anything, they are doing more now because of the incident in Missouri with the Michael Brown case. So there's more going on now than it used to be, because people are now even as the president himself mentioned and Eric Holder both mentioned that before they got in the position that they're in, they were targeted, you know, by the police. And these are things that the problem's not going to go away too soon. But the thing is, people, when I was running New Vision Organization, I was trying to get a lot of minorities involved, because they know more than anyone else about the issues of racism and the injustice going on and the results that you know, that come from all this racism. But I started to get them in the end. I didn't realize I was getting them. Had I known at the time, the volunteers that were coming on board, a lot of them were minorities, I probably would not have stepped down. But I did, and once I stepped down, the board members changed, and there was no way to reverse it. But the letter writing campaign is a campaign that people can do from any state at all. You can do it from the comforts of your own home, and that's how New Vision was run. People didn't have to go to any office. They didn't have to do anything. They could work from their home and doing the research and the letter writing, doing all the things that you, to this day, you can do without leaving the comforts of your home. We look
is
for
it,
people.
Is it
we look for people.
Verbiage that you use?
Pardon?
Was there any particular verbiage that you had to use in the letters?
No. If people know what the issue is, and you know what I say to everyone, people will say, well, how can we help this person? What should we do? Well, the way I look at it as if it's your own family member. How would you want your own family member treated? See, in your case, your family have been there for your brother, so, which is not the case all the time. It's very unique to have a family that heavily involved with their sibling or their son or their daughter or the juveniles. People just give up on their family members when something like this happens. in your case, you stuck by him, and I admire you for that because, again, I say this is not common. And so what happens with a lot of people when they come on, when they were wanting to volunteer, they wanted to volunteer, but they had not a clue of how to go about it. So as I used to tell them all the time, look at it as though it's your own family member. What do you want to see happen? How do you want to go about getting the help? One of the things I recommend to people all the time is to go on the Internet, Facebook or anywhere, and type in prisoner advocacy groups. There's a website, it's called Prison Online, PTO, Prison Talk Online. If you go online and you type in Prison Talk Online, you go on there and you sign up to join that. Because there's all kinds of resources, people helping people, family members, everybody that is trying to get help for their loved ones. There's access to getting lawyers. There's access to so many things. People don't know about it. So these are things that you want to do, too. You want to try to connect with these prisoner advocacy groups, any prisoner advocacy groups. You can type in the browser, Prison Advocacy Yahoo Groups. It'll bring you to these things. Join them. That way you can not only share information, but you can obtain information at the same time. It's ways of getting help for your loved one in any way possible, and those are some of the easier ways to get connected.
Amen. I thank you for that information, because down here trying to get his materials out, trying to do fundraisers down here, trying to get even my church members involved. I mean, I was so disappointed in the lack of concern here in Birmingham, Alabama.
With your church?
It was just outrageous.
Well, you know what it is. Well, You know how the Bible reads, the shepherds that scatter the flock?
Yes.
And I hate to think this way, but one thing I will say is, and I self-published quite a few books back in my days, and one of the things I can actually say is, people, when it comes to money, again, pastors, priests, I don't care who they are, and I study religion and I study culture, and pastors, priests, and anyone, when it comes to money, that's it. Helping the people that have fallen, which are a lot of prisoners, even the ones that have committed crimes, instead of trying to help, to turn it around, to try to help their lives become better, they stay. It's like in Exodus, in the book of Exodus 23, verses 1 through 3, it says exactly what happens. Thou shalt not follow the multitude to do evil. And in this country today, that's what people are doing. They're staying with those who they feel are more influential, rather than to go with the people that really have fallen and need the help. And this is what's been going on. So the churches, I've heard so many people say once their loved one became incarcerated, that was the end of it. You know, their churches didn't want to be involved, or they didn't want to be out there helping. So, and another, leaving the churches for a while, because I don't even want to get into that. It upsets me so much. I also wanted to let you know, there are, in every state in the United States, there's what you call ombudsman. An ombudsman will advocate. In most cases, they're there to advocate for situations like the situation that your brother is in. For Leon, people don't know it, but if you type in, if you go on the Internet, and when you go on the Internet, don't type in www. Don't type in HTTP. Type in, like you're writing on a piece of paper, exactly what you're looking for. So what you want to type in is Ombudsman in Indiana.
Okay?
When you go on Ombudsman in Indiana, or type in Ombudsman for prison issues in Indiana.
Okay.
Then you want to contact the ombudsman in that particular state, and you want to call them, and you want to let them know the issue, and you want to tell them that you're looking for some help in with your brother because he's being abused or he's being kept in solitary confinement for no reason at all. Those are the things you want to do.
Okay. I thank you for that. I have one more thing I wanted to bring up. My sister Valerie, she really is the forerunner in this campaign. She has been able to do the most. She's really been out there working her butt off in this campaign.
I can see.
My mom, as well as my mom helped her as well. But the thing I wanted to ask you about, the witness that we need the most has mysteriously disappeared. He was one of the lawyers. He was the lawyer who basically did not do none of the things he was supposed to do during the trial, which ended up in Leon's conviction. Now, we've had all different types of investigators, private investigators on him and everything. And no one seems to, it's like he's fallen off the face of the earth. No one seems to know what has happened to this man. Our researchers have took us as far as California with no results. Back to Indiana, still with no results. And I was wondering, do you know of a research? I'm going to contact the Buzz Man in Indiana, but do you know of any other places that we can get that will do a thorough investigation? And then there is a part B before you answer that. Is it possible? Because is it possible that this gentleman mishandled so many cases? Because it was told to my sister by another attorney that he wasn't even able to speak before the justice of the court. If something like that happens or he mishandled cases, will they do him like a witness protection program or take him away from the state? Is that something that may happen?
No, you're talking about the attorney, or you're talking about
who is the attorney that first handled the case, the initial case? He was the first attorney that initially handled the case, and by him not presenting certain evidence, by him not presenting the credible witnesses that could verify of Leon's innocence, verify where he was, he did not present those statements. He did not present the lineups and things as he should have, which would have totally exonerated Leon. And then all of a sudden, he's missing off of the face of the earth. No one can find him. And then when Valerie, she found another attorney in the building that used to share offices with each other, and the young man said, he's a funny individual. And, you know, it got to the point where he had to go represent him in federal court, and he doesn't think that he's no longer, you know, with the Bar Association with Indiana. So, and through the PI traces, which a lot of money has been put in to find him, to question him, because he is really the cause of Leon being incarcerated by him not presenting the evidence, but we cannot find him anywhere.
Now, have you tried to go on the internet and type his name in?
Yes.
Oh yeah, we've done a thorough search. I have his Social Security number. I have his date of birth. I have like a lot of things when he haven't renewed his license.
What is his name?
His name is Timothy John Miller. He was he represented Leon in 99 as his trial attorney, and we was looking for him to show up at his PCR hearing and to subpoena him there, but it's like he just disappeared. You know, we had hired an attorney 2 years ago, and within this 2 years, he just all of a sudden disappeared. Like, you know, it's like a conspiracy or something. You know, it's like don't no one know where Timothy Miller is at. I searched through and through, you know, from the last addresses, and as far as him being an attorney right now, his license is suspended just because he didn't respond to disciplinary. He didn't respond. It was just because he didn't respond, so it's just suspended. He can pick up his license at any time. He just needs to receive, and you know, and this was back in 2006. So I don't know what he's doing right now for a living. I know that he was married, and I talked to his wife, his ex-wife. I think they was married for a few years, she said, and that she said the last time she talked to him was 2 years ago, and he said he wanted to live a carefree life, and that he moved to California, and they had got a divorce, and she never did carry his last name, but I see that they did, they was married, you know, so it's just like, you know, I don't know, because Timothy Miller, he screwed up a lot of people with ineffective assistance to counsel. He did not stand up for his client, you know. He let a lot of things go into evidence that he should never let go. He never objected to anything. He just seemed like he didn't want to even be there. It was just like... He just let the prosecutors, and it was a total mess. It was a disaster. It was a nightmare. Yeah. So he didn't do anything. So
you had his Social Security number, and you couldn't find him even with that?
Yeah, I have his Social Security number and everything. Yes, I have his Social Security number, date of birth, everything, and he's like, I'm like, is they hiding? Because we know, like, within the courts, you know, when people get power, you know, you become a doctor, lawyer, whatever the case may be, people misuse their power, and they work for the system. And I'm thinking, like, is he working for the system? Because we know the prison industry is a business now. It's like modern-day slavery. So
what did this Timothy Miller, what did he look like?
Timothy Miller, he's a white male. He's 6 feet tall, with blonde hair and with blue eyes, and he's, you know, skinny built, 160 pounds, and very slim guy. So, you know.
And where was he from?
He's from Indianapolis, Indiana.
You know why I say this is because I'm looking at a website right now, and there was Timothy Miller, and he was admitted to the United States District Court for Northern District, Indiana, and his trial bar of the United States District Court for the Northern District of Illinois, and the United States Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit. And I'm looking at this individual. He may not have blonde hair now, but I mean,
Yeah.
How many, you know, Timothy Millers could there be that were in the bar, you know, in Indiana,
mm-hmm.
or the
he
court
in
Indiana?
Had a birthday on the 11th of last month, and he was born in 1948, so he's like 66 years old.
And this guy could be, I'm looking at it, he looks like he could be around in his 60s.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, maybe it's not the same person. It's just coincidental that this man, you know, there's so much coincidences. And I'm wondering, this person.
Do you see a picture of him?
Yeah, he's wearing glasses.
Okay.
And his hair is black in this picture.
Oh, black. You know,
Can I ask you, do you know the name of the law school he graduated from?
This one was born in 1960.
Oh, he was born in, so that's the wrong guy.
1892, 2010. He would be in his 50s, his mid-50s.
The law school,
And his wife's name now is Kimberly, and they have three children.
Okay, that's the wrong Timothy Miller, because he has no kids, and kids.
You're talking how long ago, though?
I did like a 10-year history on him. So, you know, I don't know. It's just like last year he didn't renew his driver's license. I mean, he got a valid license, but it expired. He did not renew it, you know, on his birthday.
You know what school, law school he went to?
That I'm not.
Because Mary just asked about that. Mary, Mary, I'm looking at the education in Alma College and also Duke University Law School.
If I can see anything, law school, that I don't know. I know that he waited quite some time to become an attorney. Became an attorney, I think, in 97, and then he took on a murder case in 98. Yeah, there it is. So he really didn't have that much, but it was like, you know, throughout the years, it's the cases that he did handle, they end up, you know, being convicted, and basically that was like one of the inmates wrote to the disciplinary hearing, wrote to him and made a complaint, and he didn't respond. So with no compliance, you know, his license was suspended. You know, so it's like, why you didn't respond? So, you know, I don't know.
You know, they have pictures of these attorneys, and there are more than one Timothy Miller. But if you just type Timothy Miller attorney in the browser, it'll pull up a lot. You'll be able to recognize it. If you used his Social Security and nothing came up, it's possible the man is not even living anymore. So those are things. I had a friend one time who actually, her fiancé had left, and he left in a hurry, and something was wrong. It might have been drug-related, I don't know, but they tried to find him. They did everything, including his Social Security, and he never used it. So they believe that some foul play must have, you know, come about at the time, and no one ever found out. But
yeah,
some of these things do happen, too, especially if, like you say, he, you know, if he was doing fraudulent activities or, you know, wasn't doing what he should have been doing, it's possible that he may have come up across something like that.
Right, but he, the address at 1214 North New Jersey Street in Indianapolis, Indiana, it did show, you know, with the credit report that he had bills and stuff like that in his name there at that residence. So
what was that? In what state?
In Indianapolis, Indiana. Mhm.
Okay.
And it's just like, it's the lack of, because we're not from the state of Indiana, and, you know, they could just spin us around in circles, because it's, to me, it's like deja vu, because, you know, we had an eyewitness by the name of Dakari Fullerton. And he went to the police station freely on his own. He gave the description. He was positively, he knew who committed that murder that day, August the 8th, 1998. And when it was time, when Leon went to trial in 99, they couldn't find, they said that they couldn't locate, you know, you have private investigators.
I don't understand. I'm looking
they
at.
They can locate Dakari Fullerton, and then, you know, years later we find out, guess where Dakari Fullerton was at? The eyewitness. In state custody.
I'm looking at Mr. John Miller, status suspended 18 years in Indianapolis, Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
So his status, it says suspended.
Yeah, he's suspended as of, it's saying that, well, maybe he's been 18 years in the field, but he's been suspended since 2006.
Okay, so it's possible, too, he's doing something else in the law. It doesn't have to
be. Yeah, right, exactly. He can still, you know, do paralegal work. He can still, you know.
Now, the Tim, you know, okay.
I saw a Timothy John Miller who got in trouble regarding child molestation himself. in 2009.
Yeah, I seen that, and I'm like, and then I'm looking like, okay, he got in trouble for that, because when I, you know, when I Google it, you know, his certificate, his marriage certificate came up. That's how I knew that he was married to Janice Sportsman. But, you know, with Timothy Miller, I just, you know, I don't know.
He could be in prison.
But it's like, why it's not showing, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that'd be something. But his wife, you know, it's like, why his wife, you know, I don't know, saying that, well, he just disappeared and he's in California. You want to live a carefree life and things didn't work out and I don't know. But
you
if
know,
he's in prison, it seemed like it should pop up, you know.
It will pop up if you go to the state and you type in whatever the state is, DOC. Like if it's Indiana, you want to type in INDOC. And then when it comes to inmate locators, type his name in the browser. But the thing is, you don't know if he is in prison in Indiana. So what you'd have to do is go through each state, each Department of Corrections in, say, Chicago or CA DOC or MA DOC or whatever state it could be. And then you look up the offender, you know, the DOC, like right now I'm on it, offender locator. There's actually, it's called the Vinelink.com.
Mm-hmm.
And if you type in Vinelink, just type the word Vinelink in the browser, it will bring you to the entire map of the U.S. And click on whatever state, and when you click on that state, it'll bring you to offender. Click on offender, and then you type in the offender's name, it'll tell you, it'll give you their ID number, and it'll tell you what prison, where they're located, what prison they're located in. That's the easiest way I would say is if you type in Vinelink, it'll bring you to the whole map, so you don't have to keep going to different states. Just keep clicking on the different states and putting in his name in until you find which one he's in, if he's in.
Okay. Well,
and I'm just typing in Indiana just to see what comes up. And there's a lot of Timothy Millers. Okay.
Right. It's a common name.
Let me.
While you guys are doing that, can I pose a question to maybe you and Mary as well? If he got in trouble for, with child pedophile or pornography, wouldn't he be listed as a sex offender?
He could too. You could check that out. You know what? You'd have to do it in each state.
Okay.
Sex offenders in whatever state.
Okay.
Now I'm looking at 10. You said how old did you say he was in his 60s?
66 years old.
Okay. Next 10. Let me see. That would be 1948.
Eight.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's see. 61, 71, previous. Okay, the oldest here was born in 58. Yeah. So he's not in a Indiana prison. So what you'd want to do is go to the different ones. As far as sex offenders and the pedophiles.
I know, like here in Alabama, we have to look them up county by county.
Oh yeah, I'm trying to see. I'm trying to think. Files, pedophiles, and let's see, Indiana. Let me just put in Indiana just and see what happens.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Register. Okay, so they have registered sex offenders in Indiana. So when you click on that, when you go there, registered sex offenders in, and then you type in, type in the name. Yeah, it says registered sex offenders in Indiana. Let me see. Millions of searches. then you have to click on something that says, I understand. I guess it's an agreement. I don't know. But anyway, you can check those things out, too. Not to say that he's a pedophile, because we don't know that, but these are ways that you can try to find him as well. But getting back to Leon, again, we need to try to get as much resources out there for you and your family, and also for Leon. So you want to check out with the Ombudsman for Prisoners or for Prison Issues in Indiana. You want to send a notice out to the U.S. Department of Justice, and Jocelyn Samuels is a good one to connect with, because she's the attorney for that Justice Department.
Okay, and that district. What's her name again?
Jocelyn, J-O-C, Jocelyn Samuels.
Samuel?
It's her email address is jocelyn.samuels, SAMUELS, at usdoj.gov. And she is the acting assistant attorney general for the U.S. Department of Justice.
Okay,
you can send her an email. Sometimes they need to have all this information on as many as they can, because sometimes they will not act on an individual's case. But if there's enough complaints about a certain prison or prison issues involving a certain Department of Corrections, they may do something about it. Not that I'm guaranteeing anything, because I don't know. But those are resources that you can go, and I would feel more comfortable going with them than the U.S. Internal Affairs in the prisons with the Department of Corrections.
Right.
Let me ask you something. If we, like on our social media, if we made a post like that using Facebook or Twitter, you know, for all of his supporters to email Jocelyn Samuels with this information, Would that cause
legal backlash? No, not at all. That's what the letter writing campaign is that I have on Facebook, is that whenever we hear of any kind of abuses, anything that needs to be reported, that you send it out there. Anyone that has joined the letter writing campaign on Facebook, anyone that has joined can start writing immediately. But and I say this all the time, if we want letters to get out there, if we want phone calls to be made, we have to give them the information. We have to give them the email addresses to contact. We have to give them the telephone numbers to contact, and we have to give them the names of the people we want them to contact. So if you can do that, that would be perfect. Put it out there. Put all the resources out there, the telephone numbers, the email addresses, the fax numbers if you have it, the politicians if you want to get it out to the politicians, certain politicians, if you want to get it out to the U.S. Department of Justice, if you want to get it out to the Ombudsman, if you want to get it out to other prisoner advocacy groups, if you want to get it out to the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, if you want to get it out to Amnesty International, those are the sources that we need to get it out to.
What is your Facebook name, letters for the injustice, or
my Facebook page is Leona A. Brando. Leona Brando, but if you type when you go on Facebook and type in the browser letter writing, as soon as you type that up, my link will come up. It's not letter writing campaign. It's I'll have to go on there and see it, because I had it on my website when I had New Vision Organization, and I don't know if they still have it there. Let me just go on here.
Leona Brady?
No, Brando. Brando.
You went to Wagner High School?
No. Why, is there another Leona Brando?
Yes, it is.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not.
How are you spelling it?
I spell your Leona L-E-O-N-A.
No, L-E-O-N-N-A.
L-E-O-N-A?
N-N-A.
Oh, N-N-A, I'm sorry.
And the last name?
B-R-A-N-D-L-E?
No. It's B as in boy. R-A-N as in Nancy, D-A-O.
UMass, Barnstable High School.
Barnstable High. That's it.
Thank you.
Okay, let me just see now. I'll give you the name of the letter writing campaign here. But join that letter writing campaign. And also, Mary Neal taught me something that I didn't know, but you can actually do it. And I'm going to admit on radio that I didn't know this. But you can actually pin it to the top of your Facebook page.
Okay.
So that any information you want them to respond to, it'll always stay at the top of your Facebook page.
I see a lot of things that says, like, letter writing group, the letter writing project. It's a whole bunch of groups. With letter writing on it.
Okay, what did you type in, letter writing?
Uh-huh.
Okay. When you do these letter writing, you want to make sure the first one, letter writing advocates for incarcerated, abused, deprived, LWAFIAD. Do you see that one?
I'm trying to.
When you type in letter writing, it's right at the top of what comes up.
Okay. What comes up with me is letter writing project, letter writing ETC, letter writing campaign. Well, let me see. Letter writing advocate. You say advocate?
Uh-huh. Letter writing advocates.
Okay, I got it.
Okay, you want to click on that. The letter writing projects, what you might want to do is go on those sites and read them to see what they're about and join them if you see that they are for, you know, assisting prisoners, advocating for the incarcerated.
I went on ahead and joined. I'm going to study this because my thing is I want to say, Leona, I want to learn the verbiage to use. You know, I don't want to go out there sounding ignorant, but I don't want to go out there, you know, high boasting like I'm just some wordsmith or anything. But I just want to be able to write and effectively write a letter. I had got with one of the supporters. She was supposed to show me how to write the letter. However, due to her circumstances, she has never gotten back with me.
You don't need to write a letter.
Okay.
You don't need to write it. All you need to do is write, you know, that you'd like to have people write on behalf of Leon Benson, give the address, Leon's ID number and his address, and give the names of the people, their contact information of those that you want them to write to.
Okay.
And then give your email address so that anyone that wants to contact you or your sister can contact you to say, is there anyone else you need us to write to? Or to let you know we actually, you know, we made the calls, we wrote the letters, we've emailed them or whatever. You don't need to write the letter. They can do it themselves. You just need to give them the information that they need to know to who they're writing on behalf of and what they're writing on behalf of. In your brother's case right now, if you want them to write letters because your brother's being placed in solitary confinement for no reason at all, for whatever the reason might be, please, please, please write letters to the people I have listed below to advocate that he be released from solitary confinement. That's all they need to know.
And those persons will only be, in this case, is the Jocelyn Samuels person, correct?
You want them to write to anyone. You want them to write to Jocelyn Samuels, but you also want them to write to ACLU in Indiana. You want them to write to Amnesty International because that is an inhumane act. 10 years in solitary confinement and now being put in solitary for no reason at all, other than what you mentioned. So Amnesty International is supposed to be advocating for inhumane treatment. ACLU is supposed to be advocating for prisoners who are going through those things. And I am tired of hearing these people say that they cannot help. But if enough people write to them, then they're going to be forced to write. They're going to be forced to do something about it. And that's what we need to do as advocates across this country, is we need to keep on their backs until they do something about it. They're getting all the money, and individuals in the communities, citizens of the U.S. are doing all the work while these people are filling their pockets just simply by saying they're doing things that they're not.
Okay.
So that's why I try to encourage people. Now, in this letter-writing campaign, there's 73 members right now. That's what we want to do, is keep increasing the number of people that are letter-writing advocates. We want to keep increasing that number. And not only do we want to increase it, but we want to act on it. We don't want to just talk about it.
Right.
I've told people when they join this letter-writing campaign, don't join unless they're going to do something about it. I don't need to have people joining because they know me or they like me. I want them to join because they're ready to do something about it. And if they're not, I don't want them to join.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Thank you so much for everything. Thank you for this bundle of information and knowledge that you've given us. I truly appreciate it. We all appreciate it.
Well, it's not that I'm doing anything out of the ordinary, because we all have a reason why we get into this area of advocacy work. If it's not a family member, it's a loved one, I mean a friend or someone that we know. But this is what we all need to do, because people are so quick to judge someone when they have fallen or when they end up in prison. They're so quick to judge, but they're not willing to help. If these prisoners, I'd say 70% of them, 75% of them, if they had the support and the help that they should have gotten before they went in, they probably wouldn't have ended up in prison. And as I told so many people throughout this country, the problem with the prisoners in the United States, the people in the United States, the incarceration rate is so high. We have the highest rate of incarcerations. We have the highest rates of human rights violation in the whole world. And we have an epidemic of mental illnesses, and we have an epidemic of addictions.
Mm-hmm.
That's not even counting the wrongfully convicted. And that's why I am so upset that people are not there to help before this happens. Again, people in the communities that have these organizations, these halfway houses, transitional housing, the homeless shelter, all these places that have all this money coming in, they bring these people in and they put them out as quick as possible so they can bring more in to make more money, just like the prisons are becoming a business. The homeless shelters, people can go there. They can get a roof over their head at nighttime. They have to be out in the morning at 7 o'clock, and then they're out on the street from 7 o'clock until 5 in the afternoon doing what? Hanging out on the streets. Some of them drinking. Some of them doing the same things that put them in the homeless shelter. I see, if you're going to have a homeless shelter, if you're going to get all this money to bring these people in, then have people go in there, whether they go in as volunteers to do support groups, to do some counseling, to do some advocacy work and trying to help them get permanent living situations. Bring people into the homeless shelter so they can help these people, not just collect this money and put them out in the streets to do the same thing that brought them in the first place. So I don't blame a lot of these people that are incarcerated. I do not blame them, because they do not have that help they should be getting. this country is all about money, and they're not about advocacy work. They're not about rehabilitation. They're not about prevention work. They're not about anything but their pockets. And that's why we need to act more. We need to be more verbal. We need to be more active in trying to make a solution to all this. I'm working with right now Gerald Bowlings, who is the founder, the president of Bridges for Change out of Pennsylvania. Gerald Bowlings has a passion to help people. He works with the homeless. He works with the youth, and he's working with the prisoners that are coming out. He's trying to work with them on all these issues, on transitional housing, on food, on clothing, on everything, so that they don't go back into the prisons. And a lot of times it doesn't matter if somebody has a degree in anything. It doesn't matter if they have all this knowledge, all these connections with the politicians or out in the world with all these big shots. It matters because if you have experience in negative things, if you have been having trials and tribulations throughout your life, if you have gone through the mill, if you have been to hell and back, and you can come and you can have that all that experience in your head and in your heart, you have that passion to help others. Not only do you have the passion, but you have the wisdom because you have been there. It has made you wise and has given you the discernment and the wisdom that you need to help others. We need more people in this country that are like that. But what we're getting is these politicians who come for money. We're getting their loved ones, their friends' kids in these areas where these young people have no knowledge. They got a piece of paper and they got somebody that they know in higher places that get them into these positions. And that's why nothing's being done. It's who you know to get you in a position where you are. The Department of Corrections, if they ever did an investigation on the education of a lot of these people running these prisons and a lot of these people running the Department of Corrections itself, the administrative, they're going to find out they don't have crap. They might have an AA in something or a bachelor's in something. They don't have experience other than coming from homes of well-to-do Caucasian families who have taught them to hate. Who have taught them to abuse. And that's what we live in, a country that's full of hatred and that's full of actual ignorance. So anybody in the communities who do not feel that they're worthy, they're capable, they're intelligent enough, they have enough capabilities, they're wrong. Because if you have had any trials and tribulations in your life, and I'm going to close this radio station with this. If you have had any trials and tribulations in your life, you've got more education than any rich person, than any wealthy person out there, than any Caucasian politician or black politician that thinks that they're above everybody else now that they have made it in those spots. You have got a lot more going for you. So we're going to help your brother, and we're going to help others if everybody comes together and works in unity to make a positive change. It's not about titles, and it's not about prestige, and it's not about who you know. It's about your own hard-earned trials and tribulations and your own passion to try to do something good. And I want to thank you, Valerie. I want to thank your entire family for being on this radio show today. And I hope that you will stay in contact with me so that we can continue to work on ways to help your brother and others.
Thank you very much for inviting us, and I will stay connected.
And I hope that we can have you on the show to give us some updates as time goes on as well.
Absolutely.
We will be posting this all over the website so anybody can see it, whether it be the people that came in on this show to try to distract us or whether it be the people that are really interested in doing something about it. But again, I thank all of you for being on with us. Mary, I thank you for having this show going for us, and we'll talk soon.